Welcome to CPC. I'm really glad you're here today. Welcome to those of you joining us online. I'm really glad that you're here for the third week of our Thrill of Hope series. And I thought, you know, it's not hard to recognize brokenness in the world today, is it? It's not hard. I was thinking, gosh, I don't know if you read the newspaper or if you read your news like me on an app on your phone, but if you just click the news app and it opens up, just check out the recent headlines. They're not that good. Fires in Napa and Sonoma, fires in Southern California. It's like we have fatigue from fires happening, but these are real events. We've got the Vegas shooting. We've got the shooting at the church in South Texas. We have hurricanes, flooding, earthquakes happening around the world. There's a tension around politics in this country like I've certainly never experienced in my 36 years. There's a racial tension in this country that's just growing every single day. Every day I open the news app, there's at least one more case of sexual harassment or assault that comes out. Seems like every single day. Brokenness is all over the place. It sort of reminds me of that old phrase, you've probably heard it, but you kind of get the feeling like maybe the world has gone to hell in a handbasket, right? And I thought about that phrase, and I actually don't think that's true. I mean, just think for a second about the Christmas story. Just over 2,000 years ago, as the Christmas story was just starting to unfold, and think about the brokenness in the world. Imagine a Roman society where they lined criminals up on crosses in the streets of Rome to send a message to the people, submit or die. Sounds like a pretty broken time in history. Think about the Christmas story a little bit more. Think about Mary. Can you imagine being a 14-year-old girl and an angel coming to you and saying, hey, don't worry, you're going to be pregnant. But it's the Holy Spirit's baby, okay? No big deal. So you're going to be pregnant, it's the Holy Spirit's baby. Now, put yourself in her shoes for just a moment, trying to explain to your family and to your friends. No, I promise, the baby bump, it's not Joseph, it's not someone else. God came to me and said, this is going to be his son. Meanwhile, they're fitting her for a straitjacket, right? Because she's lost it. Sounds like a pretty broken story. Think about Joseph, engaged to marry this girl that he has feelings for, that he loves. It's an arranged marriage, but somehow it's worked out in his favor. She's someone he could see himself really loving. And then she comes to him and says, listen, I'm pregnant, but it's God's baby. And he says, oh no, not only has Mary cheated on me, but she's lost it. She's had a mental breakdown. And imagine the anguish he's going through. How do I delicately do this? How do I separate myself from her without hurting her? The world is a broken place. You know, I'll be really honest with you. I don't like talking about my brokenness. I don't like it. The truth is I try to put on this sort of exterior that lets you think everything's pretty good with him. He's okay. He's pretty strong. He's pretty capable. But that's not always true. In fact, there's a lot of brokenness in my life. I thought about myself. You know, probably the greatest challenge in my marriage, if I think about it, is the fact that I have a hard time letting someone in to see the brokenness. Heck, I'm up here preaching in front of all of you, but the truth is I'm secretly just worried. What are you going to think about me? I worry like, man, if our church finds out that Tyler's not preaching this weekend, is anyone actually going to show up? Not sure you were supposed to laugh at that, but okay, I'll take it. Insecurity is a good indication of brokenness in my life and in your life. You know, when I was younger, I realized, man, there's some painful places in my life that haven't been dealt with. And someone who was very wise came to me and said, if you don't deal with and confront and talk about these things in your life, they're going to wreak havoc. They're going to destroy your relationships. They're really going to hurt you down the road. And I heard this person and I got into counseling. And that year plus of counseling, I mean, God used it to change my life. I know what it means to be broken, and I think all of us really do know what it means to be broken. If you're anything like me, I bet there are any number of things in your life you would say, if I could just fix this, my life would be great. My life would be complete. My life would be so good. Every one of us on some level can relate to that feeling deep down inside. If I could just change this one thing, get this one thing, fix this one relationship. If I could just make my husband believe, if I could just make my kids believe, if I could just heal this one broken relationship, then my life would be so much better. That deep-seated feeling in each of us represents brokenness. And listen, the holidays are a hard time for a lot of people because it's in this season you're most keenly aware of that person who you lost this last year. Because you're trying to celebrate Christmas, and it's hard because they're not there for the first time. It's in this season where we recognize and realize the broken and fractured relationships in our family. I just want to have Christmas dinner and get everyone together, but for some reason, that's proving difficult. Loneliness becomes really real in this season. Part of me even wonders if perhaps all of the busyness we carry in our lives serves as our own sort of personal distraction from the pain of brokenness in our lives. No matter the cause, we all know what it means to be broken. Today we're going to look at a story, a really incredible story in Luke chapter 15, starting in verse 11. It's a story about a father and his two sons. I'm going to read from chapter 15, starting in verse 11. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, forgive me. No, Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and he hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything." The younger son in the story does the unthinkable and goes to his father and says, "Father, I know you're still alive and well and healthy, but just give me my inheritance." It's tantamount to the son saying to the father, "Father, your money means so much more to me than your presence in my life. Just give me what's owed me." And this wasn't lost on the crowd that Jesus is talking to, this Jewish crowd. They understood what the son was saying. "Father, listen, I wish you were dead so I could get what's coming to me." In the audience, when Jesus is telling this story, they're fully expecting the father to do what any self-respecting Jewish nobleman would do: to ridicule, to punish, to admonish, to chastise his son and say, "What are you talking about?" But that's not what he does. The father is unexpectedly generous. And I was thinking this week about how the younger son sets off for a distant country, and it reminded me of sort of this Christmas tradition. Anybody ever heard of the Elf on the Shelf? Okay, good, a few of you. Here's the Elf on the Shelf. It's a little creepy, I'm going to be honest with you. But that's okay. I was thinking about this Elf on the Shelf, though, and I decided instead of me trying to explain it, I just read to you what it says on their website, okay? I'm going to explain what the Elf on the Shelf is. The Elf on the Shelf is a special scout elf. Makes sense? Sent from the North Pole to help Santa Claus manage his naughty and nice list. When a family adopts an elf and gives it a name, the elf receives its Christmas magic and can fly to the North Pole each night to tell Santa Claus about all the day's adventures. Each morning, the elf returns to its family and perches in a different place to watch the fun. Children love to wake up and race around the house looking for their elf each morning. Fun concept, right? Kind of a fun concept, but I'm going to be really honest with you. This would have never worked on me when I was a kid. The elf sits stationary on a shelf in one room in the house. I mean, I'm just going to the next room. and I'm going to do whatever I want. I'll go to the garage. I'll go outside, whatever. Just let me get away from the elf before I do something that would disqualify me in Santa's eyes. Right? This would never work for me. And I sort of chuckled to myself about that, and then something jumped out to me. So many times in life, we sort of treat God like the elf on the shelf. And we go around the corner, we try to go to a distant land, we try to go to some other place, we try to distance ourselves from God's presence in our life, thinking, if I just get out of his view, then what I'm about to do won't count. And that's what this younger son does. He goes to a distant land. He tries to run to this distant place in hopes of doing what he wants without disappointing his father. Why? Because he's broken. Now, we experience brokenness in our lives for lots of different reasons. Sometimes brokenness in our lives is directly related to the mistakes that we've made. Verse 14 says, after he had spent everything, so it's all gone. Now, it doesn't tell us how long it's taken, but I get the feeling it's one short season. He's wasted everything. He says, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he's lost everything, and now a famine hits. And I thought about that sort of that sequence of events. So he makes these decisions. He wastes everything, the entire inheritance. He's burned all of these bridges. And then, bam, a famine hits. I thought, life is full of famines. Life is full of all different kinds of famines. I think there are two basic types of famines that we face in life. There are the force of nature famines. And then there are the eyes wide open famines. Force of nature famines are totally out of our control. They strike when we least expect it. And they're devastating. Examples. Listen, you lose a job out of the blue. Didn't see it coming right before Christmas. That's a force of nature famine. A diagnosis of cancer or some serious disease. You didn't see it coming. Now, instead of having the next 20 years to live, you've got months. The sudden loss of a loved one. You get the phone call no one wants to get. These are force of nature famines. These things happen, and you never see them coming. They're totally outside of your control. They strike without warning, and they're painful to walk through. Then you have the eyes wide open famines. These are the famines we willingly walk into in life. We make choices to travel to distant lands and live wildly like the younger son in the story. And because of that, we suffer through all the consequences of those decisions. We get caught up in addiction and we end up in a famine in life. We allow gossip to consume our relationships, and then famine strikes. We start fantasizing about a relationship with someone else. And that leads us into a time of famine. The IRS is after us because we tried to cheat the system, and now we're in famine. We choose to choose our work over our kids, and then we struggle because we don't have a good relationship with them. All examples of famines. We walk into these famines, eyes wide open, to do things we never imagined we would do, but we find ourselves doing them anyway, willingly. And then we're in this famine of brokenness and suffering as we walk through the consequences of our choices. You know, the ironic thing is both of these types of famines leave us in the same place of brokenness. Both of them leave us in the same place of brokenness. Sometimes brokenness happens to us because of someone else's decisions, and that's not right. Some of us in this room have been so deeply wounded because of the decisions of a spouse, because of the pain of that relationship, we just can't ever imagine how life is ever going to return to normal. Abuse, neglect, betrayal. These are real famines that strike, and they leave us broken in the deepest places. And the younger son finds himself in all kinds of famine. First, it's self-inflicted famine. Then it's a relational famine, because all of those friends that he was partying with, they're gone. Nowhere to be found. And finally, it's the force of nature famine strikes in the land, and everyone is hungry. Everyone is looking for work. The crisis is so severe that this Jewish man has to find a job feeding pigs. The audience would have heard this and cringed, because a pig would be an unclean animal. And he doesn't get paid for this job. His only pay is wrestling with the pigs over the pig feed. That's how far things have gone. Look at what happened in verse 17. Verse 17, it says, when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I'll set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. The son starts thinking about his father. Huh, what's the deal with my father? My father was so generous to my brother and I, but not just generous to my brother and I, he was even generous to his servants. Even they have plenty of food, and this famine won't affect them. They're prepared for this. My father takes care of even the servants. The question I have for you today is, how long will you continue living in your brokenness? How long will you continue living in your brokenness? Because the son walks through all of these different famines, all of these different opportunities to respond differently, and he keeps walking. It's the eyes wide open famines, and it walks him into all of these horrible choices, and now real famine has struck. How long are you going to continue living in your brokenness? Some of you, it's been a lifetime of inescapable pain and struggle and suffering. And there's not a moment that goes by in your life where you're not aware of the brokenness and the pain in your life. Look at what the son does in verse 20. This is important. It says, so he got up and he went to his father. He got up and he went to his father. I think this is an important little line in the story. You see, in his brokenness, his wayward son decides the only hope he has is to bet on his father's mercy, bet on his father's love, bet on his father's forgiveness. Why? Because Jesus is the only hope for your brokenness. Jesus is the only hope for your brokenness. It doesn't matter why you're broken. It doesn't matter if your wounds are self-inflicted, if you're the victim of someone else's wrongdoing. Jesus is the only hope for your brokenness. He's the only hope you have in the midst of your suffering, your pain, the only hope because of a cancer diagnosis, only hope in grief, in loss, in anger, the only hope in your family, in your fractured relationship. He's the only hope in your fears, only hope in your regrets. Jesus is hope for brokenness in my life and in your life. What are you going to do in the midst of your brokenness? I hope you do like the younger son in this story who, in the midst of his brokenness, finally comes to his senses, and then he turns around and he heads toward the Father. I hope in the midst of your brokenness, whether self-inflicted or not, you turn and you set out on a path back toward the Father. Maybe you're thinking, well, how am I going to head back to Jesus because I don't have that relationship? Well, it doesn't matter. It's the same idea. If you recognize that feeling deep within that something is missing, that something is broken and in need of healing, in need of redemption, in need of forgiveness, and you won't find it anywhere else except in Jesus. You see, I think the son in this story was broken long before he actually left his father's house. That's what drives him to the distant land. Because deep down inside, I believe every one of us realizes something is missing and we're desperately, desperately hoping we can find some relief. We can find some meaning, some purpose. Let me explain what I mean. We search for hope in all kinds of different places, don't we? We're always searching for hope. But eventually we come to realize there's no hope in the places we've been searching. We always tell ourselves, it'll be this next thing. That's what we'll do. That's what will complete my life. If I could get into X college, my life would be complete. And then, it progresses a little bit. If I could just get a job, any job, my life would be complete. And then it's, all I want is just a little promotion, a little more money would be nice. My life would be complete. If I just had a corner office, I've earned it. My life would be complete. If I owned a home, if I had that car, that wife, those kids, my life would be complete. You get the picture. At the bottom of each of those searches, we find this emptiness that leads us to another search and yet another search, hoping that at some point we'll find something that will fix the brokenness. But it never does. Because at the bottom of all of those searches, we find emptiness. So we strike up another search, hoping that will do the trick. But nothing can ever offer any kind of lasting hope except for Jesus. Jesus is the only one who can offer. We pick up the story in verse 20. It says, "But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate." What a beautiful picture. What a beautiful picture. The son is trying to return home to a conditional form of acceptance. Let me just be a servant. I'll serve you. Let me just join the servants in your house. It can be conditional. So many times I believe the lie that I'm no longer worthy of God's love and acceptance. So many times I tell myself, I'm not worth it to God anymore. I've gone too far. But just like the father in the story, God continues to remind me of my status in his family, saved by grace, forgiven and free. Saved by grace, forgiven and free. The picture of the father in this story would have been disturbing to Jesus' audience. You see, no self-respecting Jewish nobleman would run to greet his rebellious son. Much less would any Jewish nobleman even run in anyway and disgrace himself. No. In fact, what would have been expected is that the father would have waited back. He would have waited back for the son to come, for the son to grovel, for the son to crawl his way in humiliation to the father, and a crowd would gather around, and then the father would publicly ridicule and chastise and punish his son in front of the whole crowd, even possibly beat his son, all in an effort to gain back some semblance of respect in the community. But that's not what the father does. That's not what he does at all. Do you see how the father keeps doing the opposite of what the crowd expects him to do? At every turn, he always does the exact opposite of what everyone expects. He generously gives the inheritance to his sons in the first place. The father doesn't stop or restrain his son from leaving. Then he does the unthinkable. He runs to his son. They expect him to be angry. Instead, he's overjoyed. They expect him to chastise, punish, and beat his son. Instead, what does he do? He showers him with kisses and hugs. They expect him to downgrade his son's status. Fine, you can be a servant in my house, but that's it. But instead, he reinstates and reestablishes his son's position. You're fully reinstated. There was never a question in his heart or mind. They expect the son to have to earn his way back into the father's good graces. Instead, the father freely forgives him. Listen, this is huge. The father in the story is Jesus. The father in the story is Jesus. You see, the Jews, they were awaiting a warrior king who would free them from Roman rule. And God sent Jesus, who said, "I came to serve, not to be served." The opposite of what the people were expecting. They expected a king as Messiah, but Jesus came to them humbled as a little baby. They expected someone who would rule with an iron fist, but Jesus came offering forgiveness and hope to the hopeless. Never what they expected, but exactly what we needed. Jesus doesn't wait for us to find our way to him. The moment we turn to him, the very moment we make any little move in his direction, God does the unthinkable through Jesus. Jesus runs to us because that's how much he loves us. You know, Christmas is really the same story. It's the exact same story. God responded to brokenness in the world by sending his son Jesus, and that's God's response to your brokenness as well. Jesus. Jesus. You know, some of us absolutely believe that Jesus is hope for our brokenness. In fact, we've been at this Christianity thing, this Jesus thing for a long time. Some of us, many, many, many years. But the truth is, we identify with the older brother in the story. Let's look at what it says about the older brother. says, meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard the music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. Your brother's come home, he replied, and your father has killed a fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him? I thought about the older son in this story. It's his self-righteousness that keeps him from recognizing his own brokenness. Here's the thing. Sometimes we get caught in the trap of comparison. What's the older brother doing? He's comparing himself to the younger brother. He's like, Dad, listen, here I've been slaving away. I've obeyed you every time. Anything you ask, it's done. But then my idiot brother runs off with the inheritance and wasted on partying and prostitutes. I'm so much better than him. I'm so much better than him. Why are you celebrating him? Why are you so excited that he's back? Why are we partying for him? You never threw a party for me. I've been here the whole time obeying you, Father. Shouldn't you be celebrating me? Because I'm so much better than him. We should be celebrating me. And I thought about the older son. I realized, man, he's got it confused. The father doesn't love him because he deserves or has earned his love and acceptance. The father loves him because that's who the father is. The father loves extravagantly because he is so good and gracious and compassionate. But the older son has missed the point. He's misplaced his hope. He's hoped all along, you know, if I'm faithful, if I'm consistent, if I serve my father, if I do everything he asks me to do, then maybe my father will love me more. Maybe he'll love me more. God loves you. You can't earn his love or become worthy of his acceptance. Maybe some of us here today are really broken because we've been on our best behavior for years and years and years, walking on thin ice, fearing if I fail, if I slip a little bit, God won't love me anymore. And I think Jesus has the Pharisees, who were the religious leaders, in mind with this older brother. They were the teachers of the law. They knew the scriptures better than everyone. They literally memorized huge chunks of scripture. But here's the reality. They didn't believe that they needed God's forgiveness. There's so many times, so many seasons in my life where I get confused and I start trying to earn God's love and acceptance. I'll tell myself, you know, if I can just read my Bible a little more consistently, maybe God will love me more. If my prayer life, I could just improve my prayer, I could gain more, if I could pray for longer without falling asleep, then maybe God will love me more. If I could just do more, if I could just be more, you fill in the blank. Whatever it is for you, maybe God would love me more. But the truth is brokenness to God. It doesn't matter if it's self-inflicted or if it's a force of nature, famine, something that hits you and you don't expect it. That doesn't matter. Brokenness is brokenness to God, period. Could be pride. Maybe it's pride in your life. Doesn't matter what it is. God's response to brokenness is the same every time. Jesus is the only hope for your brokenness. Look at what the father says to the older brother in verse 31. This is beautiful. He says, my son, you are always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he's found. Do you notice the father offers the same acceptance, the same love, the same grace, the same status in the family to the older brother as he offered to the younger brother? The invitation is the same. The response is the same. Because the father loves both the younger son and the older son with the same love and acceptance. He's just as generous with both. But the older son doesn't see it. The younger son knows he needs it. The older one doesn't realize he needs it. You know, I find it interesting that we don't get to see the response of the older brother to the father. The father says, no, son, you're always with me. Everything I have is yours. I love you. But we don't see the response of the older brother. And I wonder if Jesus leaves his response open-ended so that we're forced to answer the question ourselves. How am I going to respond to Jesus in this moment? How am I going to respond to Jesus this Christmas? You see, God sent Jesus into the world to be the hope of the world and to be your hope and my hope. How are you going to respond? Maybe you've kind of been responding like the older brother. I'm sure God is so happy that I'm on his team because I'm so great. Or do you see in yourself brokenness and say, I'm so moved by God's love for me. I'm moved by Jesus' forgiveness in my life. Or maybe you would be honest and say, listen, I'm suffering through the worst kind of self-inflicted famine right now, and I just know God doesn't want me. I'm not worthy. Yes, he does. That's when God does his best work in the midst of brokenness, not just in the world, but in your life, in my life. See, your broken mess is God's opportunity to show you how much he really does love you. But if you continue to hold on to your pride saying, I don't know if he'll really accept me. How are you going to respond to Jesus today? The picture we get of the father in this story is that he continually looks to the horizon, hoping to see his wayward son in the distance. Day after day, he waits, he watches patiently. And the moment his son takes just one step in his direction, he runs to him. He runs to him. And here's the deal. You may think to yourself, I'm a million miles away from my father today. But if you just turn and you're a million miles away, you turn and you take one step in the right direction, one step in his direction, he runs to you. He runs to you. And then here's the deal. That shame and that guilt, that regret that Tyler was talking about, that fear, all of those things that you're worried about him seeing, that you're worried about exposing to him, he already knows. And you know what he's going to do? He's going to do what the father in the story does. He's going to hug you and accept you and love you. He's going to kiss you. He's going to reinstate you. This is my son. This is my daughter. And guess what? No one can take them away from me. Because why? Because I paid the ultimate price in order to be able to call you sons and daughters. I gave my life. Because I know how broken every person is. I was willing to be broken on the cross for the sin and the famine and the mistakes of every person who would ever live, every person who would just turn and take one step in my direction, I will run to them and I will pour on them my love and affection and my forgiveness. Jesus is the only hope for your brokenness. He's the only hope for your brokenness. How long will you continue in your brokenness before you take that step in his direction? Would you pray with me as we close? Dear Jesus, thank you so much just for this beautiful story. I know it's a story that you told about a father and his two sons, but really it's a story about you and about us. God, every one of us, we can relate with these two brothers, probably both of them, honestly. The question is, Lord, how are we going to respond to you today? Are we going to stay with arms crossed, arms folded, saying, I've earned your love and acceptance? Or are we going to let our arms down and turn and take a step toward you in this moment, a step toward you saying, I know there's brokenness in my life and you're my only hope, Jesus. You're my only hope for the brokenness in my life. Nothing else, no one else, no other thing can fix that brokenness. But just like you carried the sin and the weight of the sin that was on the world, that was on each of us to the cross willingly, you will carry the brokenness that's in each of us. God, you do your best work in the midst of brokenness. Thank you so much. Thank you so much that you willingly receive us and accept us. We can't earn it. It's all about you and what you've done. It's in Jesus' name we pray.